Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the 100th episode of the Mum and Mama podcast. Who'd have thought it would have got to 100 episodes? If this is your first time listening, hi. There are 99 other episodes you have to listen to before you can listen to this one. Only joking. Yeah, we started, myself and my mate Harry started 2 years ago as a positive been on single parenting and co-parenting, and then after a year she left to concentrate on all the millions of other things she does, and I've carried it on, and it's kind of just evolved into a chat with people really that I like and find interesting. It's still about being a mum and a woman and all that shiz, but yeah, it's evolving. Thank you for listening, thank you for all your support as well. I really do appreciate it, and I do really find it touching when people contact me and tell me that they listen. I get a lot of surprise listeners, which is lovely. And I feel like there's generally something for everyone in my podcast, which is, I like. I know you can't please all the people all the time, but I try. But yeah, how are you? I hope you are good. It's my eldest daughter's 11th birthday today when I'm doing this little intro, Thursday. So we're going to see Sing later. I'm very excited about that. And I got her, I mean, I've got her a few presents, but one of the presents I got her was a hot chocolate maker. So my friend got one for Christmas from Hotel Chocolat, and she was raving about how amazing it was. But it was like £100, and I don't drink enough hot chocolate to warrant spending £100 on what is essentially a milk frother. But anyway, so I was looking on Facebook the other day, and Aldi have got their own version, which was £40, and I thought, do you know what, actually, I love that. So I've just, she's opened it, I thought, oh, I can get that for Lola for her birthday. So I did, and I've just used it for the first time and frothed the milk for my coffee, and it is nice, and I'm quite excited. We're going to go shopping and get lots of different chocolate things that she can put in it. So it's quite a big day in the Bullman household, because I've got my own frothy coffee for the first time, and an 11-year-old. Oh my god. Anyway, so this week I got my old mate Scroobius Pip on, because as you'll hear, a friend of mine suggested that I should do a podcast on my sobriety, because when she talks about the fact that I don't drink anymore, and it was a choice rather than kind of like a forced life decision, people always ask her questions. So she was like, why don't you just do a podcast about it? So I was like, all right then. And then I thought, I can't just sit here and talk for an hour, because it will be like this. I'll just be like, oh, fumbling over my words and thinking, what am I going to say? And then going off on tangents. So I was like, I know what I'll do. I'll get my old mate Pip on to talk about it, because he's not sober, but he really does not drink that much. And he's been like that for a long time. So I thought, he's obviously got experience, because it's hard. It's not hard, but it's weird being a sober person when you don't have to be a sober person for other people. So yeah, so it was good, because we've not really spoken about how he felt when I was partying hard, and he thought it probably wasn't the best idea. So yeah, it was. I learned some things. But anyway, I hope you enjoy it. If any of the stuff we discuss makes you want to ask any questions, then please get in touch with either of us. He'll probably hate me for saying this, but he does answer questions if you ask him. Other than that, if it's when he's going to start making music again, because that's not happening. But yeah, get in touch and I'll see you in a bit.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Work.
It does help me though.
Yeah, you're weird then. Essentially, no. But sure. You go ahead.
You know this. So hi.
Hello, how's it going?
Hello, I'm all right, thanks. How are you?
Well, I'm good. We've just been talking for 30 minutes, so and then we realised that we were meant to be recording a podcast, yeah. So here we are.
Hi. So the reason, well, I'll explain this. So a week or two ago, I was talking to Nicole, and she was like, I was just talking to my client about you. She's a hairdresser, because she's considering to give up alcohol, so I told you about. She was telling her about me because obviously I don't drink anymore. Mm-hmm. And she was like, I really think you should do a podcast about your sobriety because people ask her, because she does talk about me a lot because obviously I'm amazing. But she was like, people always ask questions. And she's like, maybe you should do a podcast explaining why you stopped drinking and how you've done it. And because the thing with me is I don't know why, but it's not an effort. Like if it had been 20 years ago, when obviously my lifestyle was very different, mm-hmm. it would have been extremely hard for me to give up alcohol. But
or I'd say 10 to 15 years ago, you'd mock me all the time for not particularly drinking, and
yes.
And you were far more of a drinker. I've said before, the decades we've known each other, your dad is still one of my favourite people for just constantly offering me booze, and I'm not sober, but I drink a couple of times a year, so in general most times I see you or your family I'm sober, and your dad will always be some champagne, Pip. No, I'm good, I don't really drink. It's like, okay, and then later on it's like, you sure you don't want any champagne, Pip, or whatever it is. But yeah,
but that's the thing, because I have kind of, I mean, I'll go into it more, but like
it's why it's interesting, it's why I was up for having this chat, because you do have a family who drink, like not like yes. a bunch of alcoholics, but a drinking culture is in your family. It's
very
quite a social
so.
Thing.
Yeah.
You've also lived in the clubbing scene, the music scene, all of these worlds where drink and other substances are very much a thing.
Yes.
And you've also witnessed the different people in your life having get to a point where you could argue they've got a problem with alcohol and things like that. So
yep.
I think you've seen a lot of different things. So it's kind of, yeah, it's an interesting one. And again, I want to talk about how I think it was easy for you, but it was easy when you decided
yes.
it was going to be easy. Because there was a long period where you were reacting bad to alcohol and still drinking alcohol.
Yes.
And it's like, right, so you've got a physical reason
to
not drink.
That's been the whole time I've drunk, because without the skin issues, I used to throw up. Like, I never used to have a Sunday. Yeah. My Sunday was spent laying in bed feeling like I was going to die because my headache was so bad and being sick, like constantly being sick, but I didn't have anything to throw up. Yeah. Thinking, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this to myself?
Well, should we kind of start with what your initial relationship was with alcohol? Like, when did you start? Because, again, from where we're from, it's often quite a young age.
Yeah.
Drinking in parks. And I always explain it as one of the reasons I don't drink much anymore is because I had a breakthrough of realising, oh, you can choose if you drink or not.
Yeah.
It sounds really stupid, but as a kid, it wasn't a choice. Oh, we're going out. Well, we're getting drunk then. That wasn't a, do I want to drink or do I not want to drink? It was, we're going out. Not only are we drinking, we're drinking until we're drunk. It wasn't a conscious choice or thing. Yeah.
You go out to get drunk.
Yeah, yeah.
So I would have, well, like most of us, it was under subways and in parks drinking bottles of cider when I was like 13. I don't know. I mean, I remember, and Thunderbird. I remember I drank a whole bottle of Thunderbird and I was really fucking sick. And I must have been about 14. So I've never really got on well with alcohol. And I'm a lightweight as well. So I'd always have...
You're quite a little person, so it makes sense that you're not going to be...
But I do think... Is it something to do with the oxygen in your blood?
I don't know.
Because I flush when I drink. Mm. It does affect my face, and that's in my family. Like, they're, you know, red-faced drinkers.
Yeah, yeah.
And all drugs, any drugs that I've ever taken. Oh, Lola's just walked in. Say hello to Uncle Kip. <Kip. laughs> Well, oh, opening. What are you making, pancakes?
Yeah, Gina wants me to.
Say hello. Maybe she can't hear you. Say hello.
No.
No, wave.
No, just wave. Look, you just do it like that.
Like what? Just, oh, I didn't realise that's how life works. Okay.
Amazing. Love you.
No. Wish I could say the same.
She's left the door open, but I'll leave it.
Of course she has.
Yeah, any drugs that I took, I'd only ever take a little bit. Mm. Like when we used to go out taking pills, I'd only ever take half because that was enough. And I don't know if it was like, I don't think it was like a control thing because some people don't like doing a lot because they want to stay in control. But as soon as I did anything, I lost all control. So I don't think it was that.
It was more a cheapness thing. I can make this last two nights.
I didn't like the strongness, I guess, because sometimes when you used to take things, they used to be a bit stronger, and I didn't like that. So I suppose I was sensible, I guess. Mm. I'd only do a little bit, and then I'd find that was enough anyway. So I have always been a lightweight, but
it's one of the good things about alcohol is it's gradual and controlled. Most other drugs, you take it and then at some point it hits you. Whereas alcohol, you have one drink, it starts to hit you. You have another drink, starts to hit you. Do you know what I mean? There's cut-off points.
But then you say that, but then when at a point in my life I used to do quite a lot of cocaine and it was... I didn't have the intention that was what was going to... how the night was going to go, but literally we'd go to the pub after work on a Tuesday, say, and we'd have a drink and think, oh, yeah, have a drink. And I'd literally have a mouthful of wine and immediately I was like, let's get some drugs in.
Yeah.
And it was literally a mouthful. It wasn't even if I'd have to have a whole drink.
Yeah.
It was just like a little bit. And then I was like, my mind started going. So...
Gateway drug, mate.
Well, yeah.
Alcohol. Interestingly, fun fact, and again, there's numerous parts of this you might want to edit out, so you're welcome to. I wasn't sure if we were going to talk about sobriety from alcohol or sobriety from everything. So that's up to you as a parent if you want to leave it in. But you, Chris, and Warren all made me, are all part of me having such a firm opinion about cocaine. Because strangers on cocaine being insufferable, it was like, cool, I don't know them, they're probably a dick. But people that I really love and enjoy being around, suddenly being absolutely insufferable and I don't want to be anywhere near them, made me go, I don't want anything to do with that drug.
But have you
And I remember the three of you just because again, I guess I wasn't around that many people that I know on cocaine, if you know what I mean. I'd be around cocaine a lot, but I'd just assume, oh, that person's a dickhead. I said, you three were the three that I was like, oh man, this isn't, it's not for me.
Yeah. Have you done
normally,
it?
No.
It's even when you're on it, it's not a nice drug.
No.
Like, it does make you a dickhead because I talked about this on
Say Why to Drugs. The reason it's never appealed is every other drug I can see the point of it.
Yes.
And that I've just seen from seeing people on it, that was just, oh, except for cigarettes. I've also never smoked a cigarette.
Yeah.
Because again, I didn't see, oh, you just get addicted.
Yeah.
There's not actually, like, it's horrible at first. You gradually get used to it and then you're addicted. That sounds shit. And coke, it was that one. I was like, oh, you just act like a prick. And then speaking to mates, like, yeah, I could kind of feel at the time I was being. It's like, that sounds horrible.
It is so weird.
Every other drug, I get it. I don't do any of them anymore, but pills completely get. I've been so happy and loved up on pills with strangers. Acid, my favourite drug. You know, there's reasons for everything else. Even fucking speed or poppers. I've had enjoyable times within the past, but yeah, I've never understood that. But anyway,
and that's it. Yeah, it's a weird one because that is how you feel when you're on it. So I don't know what, but I suppose it is just, it's addictive. But then it's not supposed to be addictive, is it? I remember on the Say Why to Drugs, didn't they, Susie, say it's not actually addictive?
As she says, though, it's things can be not chemically addictive, but can be associatively addictive. So you've probably had nights out on that drug, and you've got an association with that night out or that feeling or whatever else. That it's like, oh, here's where we go next.
Well, it enabled you to drink more, which really, in my case, was the worst thing because I couldn't handle the amount I was drinking without it, let alone then being able to go on for a few hours because it kind of clears your head. You know, that's why I suppose it's so popular with everyone. But going back to, I obviously started drinking like everyone else did when they were like a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started going out. And I suppose it was a confidence thing. Like now, when people, because now I'll go clubbing, and obviously I don't go clubbing that much, but when I do, people are like, but how can you go to a club if you're not drunk? You know, how can you dance if you're not drunk? But I'm like, well, I'm a really good dancer, so, you know, it's just easy. But no, but you do, it's that confidence of, I don't give a shit now. I say, I'm 44, I've got kids.
Weirdly,
it's
never occurred to me that you're one of the only people that alcohol does not change your dancing in any way. You dance exactly the same if you're stone cold sober and absolutely hammered. It never occurred to me, but everyone
it's
else
just
they
having
do.
The confidence to show people. But now I don't care what they think. So it is, I can do that now. But when I was 20, I couldn't have done that.
Yeah,
do you know
I still
mean?
Can't.
There's no way.
I still can't. I've still not got that confidence. I've told you
before. I don't
think
I've ever seen you dance.
No, I've told you before that I was at a party once, and I won't go into too many details, but it was a mate's birthday party, and I wasn't particularly drinking because, as you know, I generally don't, unless I really want to. And Channing Tatum and his then missus turned up, and they were dancing with all of my mates. And I was like, I want to dance with Channing Tatum. So I literally rushed to the bar and downed about three drinks so that I could get to a point where I was comfortable to go and have a dance with Channing Tatum. And then we had a dance to Dr. Dre. But I'd spent the whole night sober just hanging out and chatting to mates. And then I was like, I want to dance now. But yeah, it's weird. It's interesting you highlight that, as that is particularly at a younger age. That is partly the reason. It's like, I want to do things, but my own insecurities are stopping me.
Yeah.
Therefore, I need to get there. So,
but I think that's a massive
thing. I still have that at this age.
But I think, I suppose because I've now decided to not do that anymore, I have to have that. Otherwise, I wouldn't go out and do anything. But I do genuinely feel, and it's like dating. It's like sober sex. Like, people are like, oh, so, you know, you have sex sober for the first time. And I'm like, well, yeah, but I don't need to be drunk to have sex. But there's all things like that people just think, I don't know if I could ever do that. And I do find that really interesting, why we're so unconfident in our natural state.
Yeah, and it all starts at younger ages, and then we just never snap out of it.
Yeah.
Like, in your teens, all these things, of course you're more self-conscious and this and that, but then that becomes the habitual thing. Again, I think it's why there's so many men who are scared of the Me Too movement and things like that, because they're fucking idiots. But because in your teens, there's so often a kind of a consensual, we're both going to be drunk because otherwise we're too nervous to do this. And that's very different from taking advantage of a drunk person, you know. There's a line, but there is a line and there's a nuance. And I think that's why a lot of men panic about, we can't do anything these days or whatever else, because they're thinking back to their youth and going, well, we used to always, like, you'd go out to get drunk so you can pull, and you'd hope, you know, you're all drunk. So it's a level playing field, but there'll be a blurred line on that. But
but that's a whole nother...
Yeah, we can talk about that another time.
About the things that I've done when I'm drunk that you wouldn't do... Yeah, but that's
but
a
you've
whole
chosen
culture.
To do when you're drunk. And again, it's two different things. 100%. What I don't want to imply is that, if you're drunk, if they were drunk, it's okay. No, there's as I said, taking advantage of someone who's drunk is a massive, massive problem, particularly in student culture and things like that. Taking advantage of drunk people, and it's a weird thing. Again, as I've grown up as well, when I was single, there were points where it was like, right, this is really annoying because this person, we're having a lovely night, but this person's got too drunk for me to feel comfortable doing anything. Do you know what I mean? And there's been numerous points in that where I've had someone really pissed off at me because I'm like, no, I'm going to get you home. I'm going to get you a cab. Because it's like, obviously, if you're single, you've probably met up with that in mind.
But again,
you need to be a responsible human. And it's like, it's been numerous times that I've gone, I've called you a cab. This is really annoying. But yeah. Anyway, I'm completely derailing this podcast and conversation.
But you're a good human, and that's why, because I think a lot of people, but also I think culturally that's how we kind of brought up to think anyway.
Yeah. That's the only reason I brought it up, because it is all these things that as you say, as a youngster, I would never have had sex or talked to a girl if I hadn't had a drink.
Yeah.
You know, it's so same with dancing at a club, same with all these other things. There's certain things that both men and women, when you're young, feel this is something that's part of it that I need. And then if you're lucky, you can unlearn that. And you can get to a point where you go, no, actually, I'm all right doing this.
I still
sober.
Remember. So there have been times in my life previously where I've been like, I need to stop doing this for whatever reason. And I remember that feeling of fear of being in a club and thinking, I really want to dance because I like a dance. Mm. But thinking, I can't because I'm sober. And I can't do this because it's so embarrassing.
Weird,
you know?
Isn't it? It's so sober and around other people. I think I've never danced drunk as freely as I have sober on my own in my house. Like on, so it isn't actually anything to do with the dancing. It's purely the comfort of being around other people. It's fucking weird.
So I've always been a massive lightweight, but I've always, drink and drugs were very ingrained in my like teens and early 20s and early 30s.
In the world that you were in, though, you know, particularly, as I said, working in clubs, working in music and all that kind of thing, they're 100% part of your, almost, again, that's the problem when you can kind of write a lot of it off as it's kind of work-related, it's kind of, it's the world I'm in, it's got to be, you know.
Yeah.
I've got to be going out and, or I'd be wasting my opportunities if I wasn't going out and doing this.
But then
that
being said, so I started working for DJs like in my early 20s, and so whenever I was out, and one of my bosses was very much, he didn't drink. I don't think he drinks at all, actually. And it was all about how you look. And I remember, so I was doing work experience at a radio station before I got the job, and I was sitting in with the DJs, and they were talking about girls in Ayia Napa. And I just remember thinking, the way they were talking about those girls, I don't ever want to be one of those girls.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? But it made me, it was disgusting the way they were talking about them. So I did, even though I did used to get out of it, I did always know what I was doing.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I never got myself in situations or did anything that I probably wouldn't have been too proud of myself for after. But one of my friends was very much like that. And when I started working for these DJs, who were quite, well, it was the Dream Team, so they were quite a big deal. I think I started working from just before they started their Radio 1 show. And I felt like I needed to disassociate myself from her because I didn't want her behaviour to... Like, it's really hard. I don't want to... Her behaviour to me, I didn't think what she did was bad because if she was happy in doing it, then she should have been able to do whatever she wanted to do. But she 100%. Always regretted her actions the next day and was ashamed of them. She wasn't putting herself in the situations that she was in for a positive reason, and because she wanted to do that, it was all very fucked up, and yeah, it was just a bit, do you know what, I don't need, well, there was other issues with our friendship anyway, but I was a bit like, I want to step away from this friendship, because I want to, now this world's my career, you know, so I need to be a professional person in this, you know, so even though I did, drugs and drink were a big part of that, my life, I was always professional in my contact.
Yeah, keeping in control.
When I was out with that. But yeah, so I did. And then also, I think I did. When I was about 18, I started getting eczema on my eyes and my lips. And I found that when I drank white wine, that's when it would flare up. So I stopped drinking white wine, which was good because white wine drunk is not the one. And beer as well. So I think there was always like a sensitivity with those. So I did stop drinking that for a little while. And then also, I think I just used to drink vodka because that was, like, on Weight Watchers, that was like the best thing to drink was vodka and soda. So I just went on to that. But I was always sick on anything that I drank. But yeah, so I did, I think I went through times in my life where I was a bit like, I'm not going to drink now because it's not doing me any good. I need to sort myself out. So I'd drive. But it was everyone else's reaction to that that was the hard thing to deal with. Like my friends, I felt like my friends weren't allowing me to be sober.
Yeah.
Like some of them, because it made them feel uncomfortable. When I was like, do you know what? I'm not going to drink tonight. They'd be like, oh, why? What's wrong?
We talked before we started of how we're going to discuss this. Or you were saying, I mean, at the start, actually, I think you said... that people assume if you say you're sober that you had a massive drinking problem or something like that. And weirdly, with friends, I think if you say anything other than I'm sober, again, particularly in our kind of area of the world, then you're going to get hassled to drink. It's why generally loads of people think I'm sober because, as I said, I drink sometimes, but it's easier to say, no, I don't drink. Then they won't keep going. Because, again, I had that for years and years where I'll just have one. Oh, come on, just... I'll say I'm driving. Again, with your dad, I'll say, I've driven, Dave. And he'll be like, oh, you can have one, though. Like,
yeah.
Don't want one if I've driven.
Never, ever will he get his head around that.
What's the point of having one? If one is going to have an effect on me, then I shouldn't be driving. And if it's not, then what's the point of it? You know, it's such a weird thing that we have in our culture. Oh, you can have one. So, why?
But even like now, because I've not drunk for 2.5 years. I mean, I did stop for health reasons. But I think now, I think I could have one probably. But I don't, because I know that if I did start again, I don't think my friends would let me then decide that I don't want to drink. Yeah. Not that they're in... control of me, but I just think for me my life would be I don't want to drink again. I'm
it's just so much more relaxed night out when people aren't hassling you to drink. Yes. I said I went through exactly that in that period where I was kind of easing off. All my mates or most of my mates would still throughout a night at some point be, oh come on, what are you doing? Like, you can just get a cab home, I'll leave your car here. It's like, what are you talking about? I don't want to drink, let alone have to get another way home and come back tomorrow to get my card. I've never wanted to drink that much.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, you always drove. But did you drive because you didn't want to drink? Or
yeah.
Did you
It was an easier to stop the argument. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a level of that. Because, again, if I wasn't drinking on a night I haven't driven, then it would be. You'd be constantly having people on your case. I've even had stuff spiked in the past as a joke, because it's like, oh, come on, and I'll be like, I'm not having anything tonight, but sneak. Yeah, again, it's
what, drink or drugs?
Both at different times. Yeah.
Did you know? Oh my god, how did you feel when you
knew? I knew when it hit me.
Oh my god, that's terrible though.
Again, it was terrible, and I don't think I've got a huge issue with drug spiking. Like, I know it's clearly a bad thing, but some people will think it's funny if it's their mates or whatever else. The reason we stopped doing Lizards in Southend, our club night, we did two versions. We did the club night twice in Southend, and they sold out, hugely successful and financially successful. But at one of them, our mutual friend and Natasha had her drink spiked by a stranger. And she was okay. She had her mates around her and they got her home. But that was the reason we never went back. I said to Stu that night, I was like, we ain't doing one in Southend again.
Yeah.
Because we'd been doing the club night in London for 4 years or so at that point, and no one had ever been spiked.
Yeah.
So I'm like, nah, I ain't doing it then. That's that done. But yeah, I was annoyed the next day a bit on these instances, but equally, I was happy I'd been spiked rather than anyone else, because... Again, as you know, at that point, I'd done most drugs.
Yeah.
So at least it's not going to be
were
this
you
completely.
Spiked with?
Do we really want to go into this? It's long, long, boring stories, right? The drug one. This is so weird, and you might have been there. I'm not sure. It was at a barbecue, and a sausage was spiked. It sounds like a joke, but with weed.
Oh, okay.
And when you eat weed, it is far more trippy and hallucinogenic.
It's why
edibles have become so popular in America now. They're legal because you do kind of get a bit trippy.
Yeah.
It's not the same as smoking it. So I ate this random sausage with weed in, and it tripped me out a bit. You know, I was drinking.
A bit.
That night anyway, so I was having a drink not knowing that I should be balancing things.
Yeah.
So I had a walk home, and I remember I was nearly at my house, and I rung my missus, and I was like, hello, I thought I'd ring you to let you know how the night went. She's like, you literally just hung up from me. So I'd rung her when I left and told her how the night went, hung up, and then thought, I'll ring my missus and let her know how the night's going. And again, as said, it's a weird one. But that was let's have a joke. But as I said, the only thing with that was I was glad I got it, because there were other people party who've never done any of that stuff.
Someone did it and just put it in for anyone to find, kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that was the thing. I was like, I think so. But that's it. I was pleased I got it, because the way that it hit me was closer to mushrooms than to weed.
Yeah,
but thankfully I've done both of them. And if you've never done either of them, that could have been really psychologically, like, permanently damaging, because it is so trippy and odd. It can do bad things. Anyway, this isn't what we're here to talk about.
No, but I just the thought of having, I mean, because I really liked taking drugs. Like, I loved taking pills. I loved acid. I always had very positive experiences, and I really enjoyed the times that I had on them. But I chose to do that. Having something forced upon me when I wasn't expecting it, that would really scare the shit out of me.
Yeah, it's horrible. It is a story that's in our circle of friends will get told and still be kind of laughed about. And I'll laugh about it, but I do think, as I said, regardless, I think it's appalling. I think anyone altering someone's consciousness in any way against their will, it's not funny to me. I don't think it's a good gag. But then with alcohol, it would just be I'm on Pepsi or whatever, and I'd, again, it normally wouldn't get far, but I'd have one swig and they'd gone to the bar and put something in it and it's like got whiskey or vodka or whatever else, and be like, I'm not drinking, lads. This is don't like, that's going to waste. And you know I'm not someone who's gonna go, oh, I'd best drink it then, as you've bought it. I'll be like, right, I guess I'll go and get myself another Pepsi then won't I?
Yeah.
I'm not easily cajoled into Slide. These things, but but that's an interesting one again. So again, speaking of, because your sobriety comes in two waves, because your sobriety from drugs was instant and firm, really, because it was when you had the kids. You kind of went, right, I can't do this anymore. I'm not doing this. You remained drinking, not during the pregnancy, but after the pregnancy, you remained... continued a relationship with alcohol for a period, but your alcohol with drugs more or less was
I did, which again
shows huge kind of willpower and or as you say like you say you found it easy. That one's a real example of you were like, well, it's not an option then.
Yeah, but it's funny because you say, because we've spoken about other things in the past and you've been like, but of course you've got willpower and because you've done this, and I'm like, but I don't recognize me stopping that as something that I've done. I feel like it wasn't a decision, because of course I had to stop taking drugs, I had children.
That's again, it's what I explain to you and to Chris all the time, is that's what willpower is. With when I got into working out, it was the reason I could do it every day or whatever else, or early, was because I removed it from being an option. It wasn't that I had the willpower to get up every day and do this. It was, fuck's sake, I've got to do my workout today. All right, I'll get through it. It wasn't that I'm like, I'm disciplined. It was exactly as you said, you, in your mind, you didn't have a choice about stopping drugs. You did. There's really bad parents out there.
Yeah.
You know, there's people who don't stop. So, but... yeah, I think that's what will... I think people misunderstand willpower a lot. And confidence, I think.
Yeah.
Chris will often talk about how inspired he can be by my confidence in things. He's like, not confident at all. I just decide, right, I need to do this then.
Yeah.
Is what it is. It's... don't want to. I'd rather not. But... this is the life I've chosen, and the next step on this path is I have to do this. And it's the same with on willpower, I think. I think people, it's because it's got a name like willpower, and it sounds like it's this big conscious thing, or big, I don't know.
But I don't know why I can't recognise how well I've done in stopping something that I wanted to stop in one sense, because I have decided to do that.
That's why I always make a point of forcing you to acknowledge that and go, look what you've done.
But like when it comes to cutting down on the sugar, I just feel like I'm powerless with that. But I'm not, because it's exactly the same thing. But I don't, it is framing that, isn't it?
Mm.
It's like, I don't know why it's so hard for me to, it's so interesting.
So I was
probably quite depressed, I reckon, in my 20s, and I definitely used alcohol as a way to deal with that. And I remember when I started doing cocaine, I did it a couple of times and I really didn't like it, and I don't know what then. I think it might have been the environment, because I was working at a club. And it was quite rife in the club that I was working in. And I don't know if I was kind of like offered it, and then it became a bit more of a thing. And then I thought, I actually quite like this now. I can't really remember. But anyway, so...
I think it can be a status thing early days as well, because it was always the expensive drug. Like compared to other drugs, it was a bit more the expensive drug. So particularly in those worlds, if you're getting offered it for free, it's like... champagne. Half of champagne's appeal is the fact it's champagne.
Yeah.
Like, it's quite nice as well. It's quite nice as well, but there are other nicer drinks, but part of the thing is the experience of it. It's opening a bottle of champagne and having a bottle of champagne rather than purely here's the taste of it. And I think it can be similar in those scenarios with cocaine, because it's like this is the the high-end drug.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, so I was drinking a lot, and then I started drugging, and I was partying a lot, I guess, but then that kind of became the norm. And then I got into a relationship where as soon as we met, we were drunk and then got gearing. And then that kind of just, that was our life for a few years. But I knew, like I said, when we go to the pub on a Tuesday night and then we'd ended up getting gearing, like I knew in myself that that wasn't right and that wasn't sustainable, because I was getting, I think I was in my early 30s by now. And I was like, I don't want to be like this. It doesn't make me feel good. I used to have 4-day hangovers. I felt terrible. I ate really badly. I wasn't doing any exercise. I don't feel like I was doing anything that was good for me. I was just kind of destroying, you know. And I knew that I had to stop, but I didn't feel that I could. Because I had tried, like I said, I in the past, there was days when I was be like, right, I'm not going to drink for January. And then it was someone's birthday in January, and my friend was like, well, you can't not drink. There's the birthday. And then a week later, there's something else happening, you know, that you've got to have a drink for it. So I never felt like I could.
Yeah, it's and often then, handy if you've got like a milestone, isn't there, to say, here's when, like, so in your early 30s, if you'd gone, oh, the millennium's about to come round, so I'll stop then. Yeah. That's just a joke about you being really old.
Prick. But yeah, I just felt like there was always, I couldn't get away with it. And then my biological clock was obviously starting to kick in.
Yeah.
And a couple of my cousins were having babies. And I was like, I want a baby. But then also I knew that having that baby would force me to stop drinking and taking drugs. And basically that's, I mean, I don't feel, I didn't get pregnant to stop, but that definitely was part of the decision. I did feel like it was weird. I did honestly have these urges, like natural urges to be like, I want to have a baby now, you know.
It's really interesting to hear that, because I've chatted to someone in the past who had a drinking problem and felt, like, but an actual drinking problem. I don't think you ever really had. It was a sustainable lifestyle, but for a period. But you were aware it wouldn't last forever. But I knew someone who had a drinking problem, and they wanted to have a child, but their partner wasn't up for it until they sorted out their drinking problem, and they felt having a child would make them sort out their drinking problem.
Yeah.
And I was kind of on the fence, on the line of, now maybe deal with it first and then have it. But that was because it was a serious problem. It's like, right, not good enough.
I never felt, I don't think I had a problem, but I definitely think if I'd have continued down the road that I was on, it would have become a problem.
You were on your way there, yeah.
But also,
I said, I remember one time when we were all out somewhere and you reminded me of an ex of mine who, in a period where I felt they had a bit of a drug problem, because it was we were all having a good night and then it switched because you needed to get some gear. And
was that we were somewhere on a gig, one of your
gigs?
It
was on tour, yeah, it was on tour. Yeah. And I remember it was a real priority that. And the night was not going to be fun now unless you got some gear. And it's like, right, I can understand that if there's some gear about, cool, but if the night's now, if an enjoyable night is now on pause until you get it, I remember that and thinking, all right, this could be an issue.
Yeah, no, I remember that. I remember that night. But yeah, the one thing I am thankful for is the fact that I can't tolerate alcohol, because I think if I could, then I'd be in a very different state now. Because I had to stop drinking because I'd throw up or I'd pass out. I could never I could never stay up all night or I could never go for a couple of days. Yeah. I'd always end up sneaking off. Oh, I'm just going to take my makeup off and then go and get in bed, you know, because I couldn't carry on because I actually physically couldn't. And then I'd be suffering the next day and then for a few more days. But I think, like my ex, if I'd have carried on a lot further than what I did, and then was up at the crack of dawn the next morning cooking a fry up and doing whatever, because it didn't have any effect on him whatsoever. Yeah. I don't think I would have been able to stop. Because, yeah. And also, I don't think I would have known in myself that it was really that bad. Because obviously, if I'm not physically feeling the effects of it, and I'm just having a lovely time, then it would have been a lot harder to realise. But yeah, so I did get pregnant. And it was an immediate, for me, that was it. I never did, well, I have actually done coke a couple of times since having the kids. But literally just a line, because that voice is still there. But still, you know, when I did drink after I had the kids, I'd still be, I mean, it wasn't straight away, but it was after I'd had a few. And if I knew it was about, I'd be like, oh yeah, even though I knew that I didn't really enjoy it. And obviously my best friend, Nicole, who I did the podcast with, had a terrible addiction and battle with cocaine. And I even did it with her when she was in the depths of her addiction and me hating that. But then still shared a line with her because I was drunk and I'm like, the next day I was like, I can't believe I did that. I can't believe that I enabled her in that. I mean, it was just awful, but that's the drug. It's horrible. It's such a horrible drug.
I think sometimes one of the problems with sobriety can often be the idea that it's a full stop or a failure.
Yes,
so you've been sober for X amount of days, you've now done something, it's all out, it's all ruined, may as well just go crazy. And I think at times for people, sobriety has to be slightly more gradual. So you do make it a full stop, but then if you slip up, again, from the sounds of it, those experiences when you did it after you'd had a kid are probably the reason you've been able to stop completely, because you've done it and then felt, oh, what have I done? That was a mess. That was horrible.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So I think that's what helped you along the way. It's not necessarily a failure. It's a bump along the road that's made you go, man, why have I gone back to that?
It's so much better. Sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And or confirmation that you've made the right choice.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. Like you go back and try it, and then you go, that wasn't anything that I've romanticised it to be, or do you know what I mean, or whatever else. Or just as said, that was great, but I feel horrible now, emotionally, even if not physically, and physically, you know. But yeah.
But yeah, so that was great. So obviously having the kids did stop me from that, which was great. But I did, and I wasn't drinking nowhere near as much as, you know, I did before I had kids. I'd have the odd glass of wine. I don't know if we used to drink every day, like have a glass of wine with dinner every day. I don't think we did, but I can't remember. But like at the weekends, we'd have some. But it was after I had Juno. So I had her in the October, and I remember it was around the December, January. I had a glass of champagne, and my face just exploded. It was all swollen. My eyes were all swollen. It was itchy. It was horrible. And I basically spent the next 2 years trying to get different medical advice to find out what was wrong. I thought maybe I was allergic to alcohol. I had all these tests done. Nothing came up. I thought I was allergic to sulfites, which is in some alcohol, but not all. But I discovered
I remember there was definitely a period of, I can drink this, but can't drink this. I maybe can drink this. This doesn't affect as bad. So it's trying to figure out what you can.
I ended up on slow gin. I don't like gin, but slow gin I liked. And I had that. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm fine. Because I literally have a mouthful and my whole face would just go bright red and so hot. It was absolutely unbelievable. I'll post pictures of what it was like.
It's horrible to have something that's so painful and uncomfortable, but so hilarious to all your friends.
Yes.
That's such a tough balance. It's like, I want to be sympathetic, but this is also hilarious. You look like you're in the clumps.
I look like Woogie. Woogie. Something about Mary.
100%.
but it was weird because I'd have some alcohol, I'd have it. Like, champagne was definitely the worst. That was one thing I couldn't have, which was my favourite, so that was awful. But then the slow gin, one day I'd drink it, I'd be fine. The next day I'd drink it, as soon as I'd have a mouthful, it had happened. So it wasn't any particular alcohol. I think it was just the effect that alcohol has on my body. It was just that instant, you know.
Really interesting, because it feels like it must be some kind of balance thing as well. So, yeah. Do you know what I mean? If it was having an effect sometimes and other times not, there was probably something that you did that day, either something you ate or something else that moved up the zinc or so. Do you know what I mean? Some random thing that would actually balance out what the effect was. And it was probably still having an effect, but just not as visible and painful.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's probably one of them.
And it was always after, whether I had the flushing and the immediate reaction or not, the next day my hands would always be itchy and my eyes with the eczema. So that all, it basically turned out at the end of 2 years of me trying to figure out what the hell was going on, I had, it was a viral thing, because I got all these spots and stuff as well, so I was put on antiviral drugs. They said it was rosacea and eczema. It's quite common for eczema to come back, because I'd had it, like I said, when I was about 19 or whatever, and I stopped drinking white wine, and then it was fine, it went. But for you to have it at that age, and then for it to come back kind of in your mid-life, it on your hands and your face, that's like the most common thing. They don't know why.
How long would it last if you were drinking, would it be gone by, particularly with the face, if you had a flare-up, would that be gone by the morning, or would that...
I still use cream now. It's like it's constantly there, but I just keep it at bay. I feel it's an immune response. We were talking before. I definitely got a shit immune system. Mm-hmm. I'll always get, if someone's ill, I'll get it. And I've always been like that. I think I have just got a shit immune system for whatever reason. And I've also got problematic hormone issues as well, and I think it's all linked. I think it is all linked, and I think it might be something to do with the endometriosis that I've got now, because now I could have always had it but just never known. And I think that there are side effects with that which could be related to why I have eczema and rosacea and whatever else. I mean, I'm hoping that that's the reason, because I'm hoping that when it does get sorted out, I might be all right. But it might just be like, but it's funny, because my mum's always like, they always say breastfeeding's the best thing. Like, I was breastfed to quite a late age. And I've got terrible skin conditions, and hay fever. And it's like, well, I'm not supposed to have those because I was breastfed. But anyway, so...
I love the idea of you being the opposite of the cliche of, you know, when, like, you pull someone when you're drunk and then you're dreading looking at them in the morning. They pull you when your face is all swollen, and then you wake up and you look lovely. Like, oh, wow, this has turned out really
That's
well.
but yeah, so I spent, it must have been a couple of years. I ended up paying to go and see someone, and they told me exactly what the NHS person had told me, but just spent 20 minutes longer explaining it. So that was literally it.
Get your money's worth.
So I was like, okay, so it's just one of those things that I'm going to have to deal with. But it did, it obviously the flushing, because it wasn't all the time, but I didn't know. And I remember I went out on a night out and we'd met in a pub to have a drink, and I literally have a couple of mouthfuls of the drink and I could feel my fucking face going up. And I was like, this is so embarrassing. It's so embarrassing. I couldn't. So anyway, so I did. Oh, and that was, so it was Christmas. I think it was Christmas 2018, and the girls were with their dad, and he was supposed to have brought them back by a certain time on Christmas Day. And I think this was the first time that I'd not been with them, like Christmas Eve, Christmas morning. And he basically brought them back a good few hours later than he was supposed to. And it got to about 4 o'clock, and I'd realised that they weren't coming home when I thought they were going to be coming home. And I just was like, I can't deal with this. And my sister, I'd obviously already started drinking because I was with my family and, you know, we started, God knows what time we started. But my sister had bought a bottle of tequila rosé, which is basically like strawberry milkshake, but it's tequila. But it doesn't taste like tequila.
Brilliant.
So we'd started doing that. And I was cooking the dinner. And so I think that was about 4 o'clock. And I'd bought the girls' karaoke mics for Christmas. And all I remember was singing ABBA songs with my nieces very loudly. And then about 8 o'clock, I was sitting down at the table and my Christmas dinner had been put in front of me, but I don't really remember eating any of it. And then I think by 8:30, I was like to Juno, come on, we've got to go to bed now. Because I was gone, do you know what I mean? And I was like, I knew I had to go to bed. And to be fair, actually, the next day I didn't feel too bad, because I think I'd had so much sleep. I wasn't actually too bad, but I just remember
Christmas
thinking...
dinner, stodgy food to soak it all up. Exactly. It's the perfect meal to go with.
But yeah, I remember the next day thinking, this isn't cool. Like, you can't deal with your problems by getting drunk. Like, that's not, you're a grown up now, supposedly. Yeah. I was like, this isn't cool. So I was like, you know what? After my birthday, because my birthday's on the 3rd of Jan, I thought, after my birthday, I'm going to give up drinking for a while. And I do also think that my skin then, obviously, the next day was really bad. And I was like, I'm just going to see if this makes an improvement. So I stopped drinking from the January to, I think it was about the May time, or maybe even the June. And then it was my friend's birthday, and I think I'd said that I'd drink then. So I started drinking again, and then my face blew up again. Mm. With all the, I got all spots around my mouth. It was horrible. My lips were all swollen. I looked like I had them done. People thought that I'd had them done. And I was like, well, it is obviously alcohol then. It's obviously alcohol that's making me like this. So I was like, I'm going to stop for a year and, you know, see how that goes. So I did. I stopped drinking. It was, I think it was the 22nd of June or something. And I was like, right, that's it. And I remember after a couple of months thinking, because people were like, oh, do you feel any better? I was like, no, I feel the same. Mm. I didn't really notice any difference, but I don't know when I started to notice the difference. But I feel so much better now for not drinking. And I didn't find it, I think because I'd had it proven to me for so many years, I'd been so ill because of drink, and I knew that I was ill because of drink, and I hated being ill because of drink, but I still went and did it. But I think with my skin problems, even though alcohol wasn't supposed to, you know, be the cause of it, it obviously was, because as soon as I did it again, it happened. So I knew that, and I didn't want to be like that. And also, I don't think I wanted to be drunk anymore. But I just needed that reason to, you know, stop me. But I think there was one time, I think it was Mother's Day, and I thought I could have a glass of champagne. And then when we went to Spain and we were sitting on the beach and everyone got a beer, and I thought, well, I liked that, you know. And that I think there'd been the only couple of times. And I went out the other night, actually, to a nice cocktail bar. And that's hard.
How many extra times is this going to be? Oh, and then there was obviously...
And then there was this time. But it was like, you know, they had the proper menus of all these different cocktails. And I thought, it is a nice... Because I did like drink. But I didn't feel like... But I didn't have... I thought, oh, it'd be nice, but I don't want to.
I think it's a change in your... The key thing is changing your relationship with alcohol and your... default approaches. So I think, again, it's different if you've got an alcohol problem, as said, but I think if you've not, that all sounds fine, that you know, I had a drink at this point, or I had a drink
at that point,
and then it's not.
I know, even though I think I probably could, like I said, I probably could have a drink now, but I drink zero alcohol beer. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, if I fancy a beer, because it tastes exactly the same. It's amazing. That 0% Heineken, it's amazing.
Wicked.
My face tingles.
Oh, really?
When I drink non-alcoholic beer, my face tingles, because I think my body's so ingrained to having that reaction.
Yes,
I hang to on. To that
here,
taste.
Here it comes.
I don't go red, but I tingle.
Weird.
Yeah. And if I really wanted a drink... I'm worried that if I had it, then my face would go bright red. I don't want to be in public. I'd have to be at home, and I don't want to drink. I'm not in those situations when I'm at home. Yeah. And I think, oh, yeah, I'll have a drink, because there's no point. And like I said, I don't think I'd then be able to get away, because now I don't drink and everyone accepts that and it's fine. But if I were to have the odd one now and then every time I go out, that's going to be a time to drink, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's going to be a reason.
Yeah. And I am scared. Like, I'm so glad that I didn't drink during lockdown, because I know that I would have been drinking every day and then eating terribly every day.
I was going to say, it's weird. I have that relationship at the moment with eating, is because at Christmas I kind of threw out any healthiness and just ate. And because I've had a bit of an injury, I've not been able to work out as much as I like to. And I've genuinely, we're in February now, and... the amount of times I've found a reason to not eat healthy, like I just had this successful thing happening. Oh, I'll get a takeaway to celebrate, or I'm doing this. Oh, I'll get a takeaway. Oh, it's the weekend. There's some fights on, and yeah, it's completely right. How if you start making that too regular a thing, then there's reasons everywhere. Like as an example of to drink, going.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I did really well this week, and that's when you can drift back into a
yeah. And it is. It's nice because it's nice. I mean, it's a nice. I enjoyed drinking. I enjoyed getting drunk. Like, it's not. I just didn't like the after effects or the hangovers, you know. But yeah, it's. I know a lot of people, and another reason why I wanted to do this podcast because it's like being an ex-smoker, isn't it? As soon as you stop smoking, you hate all smokers, and it's hard to have conversations with people who I think maybe need to cut down on the amount they are drinking because I've had the experiences that I had, and I know the reasons for it. I know you can't apply your own experiences to everyone else, but there's some people in my life who I feel drink excessively to the point where it can't be doing them any good, and I know that they black out. And I know that it inhibits their life, even though they manage it a lot better than I could have done, and they can still carry on with their day-to-day life, whereas I never would have been able to. But I can't have the conversation with them about it because obviously I'm sober. So it's a hard, you know, but it's
I'm smirking uncontrollably because this was me with loads of our mates a few years back, including when you were with your partner. Probably to both of you, and I would regularly say, look, because exactly as you're saying, it's hard because I found it easy, if you know what I mean, and I know it's not easy for everyone else, so it's hard because you don't want to be going, look, just stop then, like you're ruining your life, or here's the literal impacts it's having, just stop. But equally, you've gone through that and you know the benefits of it. So it's, you know what I mean? It can be, it's a really weird a situation because, I've completely been there kind of looking and going, look, I think you've got, I know I don't drink at all. So probably your amount of drinking seems ultra heightened.
Yeah.
But looking at the impact it's having on this or on that, I think it's a problem. And
Well, I've had people have approached me and told me that they're aware that they are drinking too much, but they just can't imagine because it's such a part of, like, with my gym. So obviously in lockdown, the gym shut down, so we all went online, but we're on, obviously, have a WhatsApp group. And every night it was like everyone was just talking about what they were drinking, and it was such a big part of, you know. And I was like, I'm so glad.
I mean, that's an interesting thing, isn't it, of that we've not touched upon, of the culture, particularly the British culture. I know I struggled a bit with numerous good friends of mine and with family at points when I basically stopped drinking, because there was a period where, you know, I tour a lot and things like that. I'll be back and people are like, oh, let's meet up and go to the pub, and I'll be like, no, I'm not really, I'm up for meeting up, but we had nothing else. I know my dad, for a period before me and my brother started going around there and my brother cooking and all that, which has been perfect, I know there was a period where he was just a bit stumped because his generation was either, me and him had always either we'll go to the pub for a catch up or we'll go to the football, and I wasn't doing either of them at that point, and it was tough. And again, people in both of our lives, numerous different people, there's been points where they'll hit me up to be, oh, it'd be good to have a catch up, let's go to the pub, and I'm like, I'm not up for the pub, and it'll kill the thing. It's like, I know with our mutual friend Stu Mangan, I use this as an example all the time, because I sensed at one point he was going through a rough time. And I said, do you want to meet up or whatever? He's like, yeah, we could go for a drink. And I was like, let's go for a walk. And it sounds so stupid, but we had one of the most lovely walks I've ever had. We walked along the seafront at Southend, and we just talked and talked and talked. And there was, in weirdly an even better way to just open up about your mental health and stuff, because we weren't having to look at each other. Like, we're walking along side by side, and that was a really a breakthrough one. But I know there's so many times that I now know I should have suggested, let's go for a walk somewhere, rather than it just becoming a closed down thing of,
yeah,
I can't suggest, because there is a drink culture in our society.
And some people need that to talk. I mean, Stu's good because he's a talker, isn't he? You know, but some, especially guys, I guess, wouldn't feel that they could talk unless they'd had a bit of a drink. So that's
completely feel it. But the other two things I wanted to talk to you about before we wrap things up, one was, do you think it helped having seen where it all could go, if you know what I mean? Like, do you think your ease into sobriety was easier because with drugs and drink, you've seen people go down a really fucking dark path?
Yeah,
and whether that be DJs you worked with, or as you said, you've had Nicole on and talked to Nicole about her stuff, having seen other people go somewhere, it can often be easier to be able to see it from the outside rather than just being in it.
I definitely feel that is a benefit. But I think it's knowing in myself as well that I really didn't want to end up like that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because that was a reality, and that wasn't a choice for me.
Yeah.
To end up like that.
Yeah.
It was what could force me to stop, because I didn't feel like I had it in me to be able to make that choice and do it, which is ridiculous because, of course, and it was, yeah. I was listening to an interview on the radio, I think it was with Thundercat, and I think he's given up drinking, and he was talking about the freedom you then feel.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, I've never thought about that. But yeah, it's true. It's like, I do feel free because I know that I can go out and I can have a really nice time, and then I can leave, and then I can wake up the next day and have a really nice time, and I haven't got to get drunk. This is
all the stuff that you used to completely mock me for being boring, because I'll leave early or I'll do whatever else it's like. It's just because now you've come over to the light side. I'm not going to call it the dark side, because the dark side sounds fun.
But how, like, one thing I did, because obviously you, when you were performing, you'd drink, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And then you just stopped that.
I was going to mention it earlier, but I didn't want to, again, keep hijacking the fucking episode. But I had a breakthrough on that, and it was exactly the same as you were saying about kind of learning to change your defaults. I used to always drink when I was gigging, and I needed it, because as you know, despite what people think, I'm not a confident person. I'm not a everyone look at me. On nights out, I'll enjoy having a chat with my mates and having a laugh, but I will rarely want the attention of the room or anything like that. That's never really been me. But before one tour, I had tonsillitis, and I just got over it just before the tour started. So I was drinking water on that tour.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I'm better sober than drunk. Previously, I needed it, but now I've been doing this for like 5, 6, 7 years and done 1,000-odd gigs. I'm good at what I do. I know what I do, so I don't need to be drunk for it. And that really helped. And there was also when I did the Edinburgh Fringe, and it was my spoken word show. Again, I had a bottle of rosé on my rider. When you've not got the energy of Dan's Beats or whatever, it's not a good thing to be getting drunk, because there can be slurring, there can be anything else if you've not got that adrenaline. So weirdly, as weird as stupid as it sounds, my pre-gig thing was doing loads of push-ups and sit-ups, because I still needed something to get my heart rate up a bit. So I'm not just walking out, I've been spending the day doing stuff, oh, now I'm doing a 60-minute gig, then I'm going to get some food on the way home, and like it still needed to feel like it was a special thing. And I remember the guy who plays John Shuttleworth and the guy who plays Angelos, both of those were on before me at different times on the thing.
Yeah.
And the backstage bit was literally a storage corridor. And they'd be coming off in their weird costumes and all that. And there'd be this poetry prick doing push-ups and sit-ups. And I really felt I had to win them over to go, look, honestly, I'm not a dick. It's just I found that I need something. Because the first couple of gigs I did, I felt were just so... I started so low energy.
Yeah.
Because, again, I'm not that... Hey guys, it's me. I'm here. So I needed something to get my heart rate up to click into it. But yeah, and that was it. As soon as I realised, exactly as you were saying, as soon as I realised, oh, I can do all of this sober and it's better. And as you say, I don't then feel rough. You know, I've never got hangovers. I know it annoys everyone in our friend group that I don't get hangovers, but I would often sleep rough. If I like have a rough night's sleep if I've got too drunk, so things like that on tour in particular, I was like, oh man, I do the gig, I go home and sleep like a baby because I've proper tuckered myself out, running around on stage all excited, and yeah, the last couple of tours, I barely had a drink, you know. Again, every now and then I might feel if we've had a good gig and we're going to like an after party or something, which rarely happened, as you know. I'm boring. As you know, often the rest of the band would go to an after party and I'd go to bed. But if I was doing one of them, I'd have a few drinks and enjoy it. But yeah. Yeah, that was interesting on that front. Well, again, we're probably going over, so you can cut any of this you want. But the one other thing I wanted to ask and mention is, and to clarify, is we've joked about your parents and your family being a drinking family. They're also incredibly supportive. So when they're trying to hassle you to drink, it's only forgetfulness. It's not any kind of oh, come on, stop being a pussy.
They are.
Do you think that's helped a lot? Because as soon as you've kind of addressed that, here's what I'm doing, I don't think any of them would, even like if you're going out clubbing with your sister or whatever else, I don't think any of them would be would be hassling you to drink. They'd be quite respectful of it. If they offer you a drink, it's because they've forgotten that you don't drink, and it's weird to them. But
I think my mum did the other... It might have been Christmas, actually. She was like, do you want a glass? And I'm like, no, thanks.
No, I'm good.
But yeah, they're
and that's on special occasions anyway, isn't it? It's understandable.
I think it's just weird for them because it is such a big culture.
And they all remember
both of their,
that Christmas you got wankered and went to bed.
Well, yeah. But it's... And they enjoy it. My mum and dad still drink, like, they'll still have a bottle of wine every night. Yeah. I think maybe Tuesdays and Wednesdays they don't. But, you know, it's still, that's still a big part of who they are. But they're fine with it. And, yeah, they are supportive. They are very supportive. They don't make me feel bad. Like I said, it's more weird for other people. But
I think
it's
that
not,
helps.
They deal
because,
with
again,
it.
I can also see how other kind of families, if you've got a dad who is very much, come on, let's go down the pub. Let's have a... Do you know what I mean? If you've got someone who's going to pressure you more into drinking...
Yes,
it could be a lot harder.
Yeah, no, they don't. I don't think they necessarily understand, but they accept it.
Yeah.
I think that's the best way.
That feels like every friendship I've got. They don't necessarily understand, but they accept.
Oh, yeah.
Lovely.
This is my 100th episode.
It's exciting, isn't it? Look at you.
I know.
Look how well you've done.
Thanks.
It's great. It's been. You've had so many good conversations, and
I have.
You've made people feel comfortable and relaxed, and it's lovely.
Thanks.
Good work.
How many episodes have you done? 7,600?
No, 430 something.
430.
So I'm not that far ahead, really.
Well, oh my God, so you started it, was it Juno had just been born? It wasn't Lola, was it? How long have you been doing it for?
7 or 8 years.
I think Juno just, I think it was around her the time she was born.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mad, eh?
Oh, it's mad. You have to have her on as a guest one day.
You froze then. That was almost perfect for the... Yeah. You went, oh.
Oh.
And then start.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Talking to me.
And good work with everything. Sobriety,
thanks.
Podcasts, all of it. Parenthood.
And you.
Cheers.
All right. Well, don't go anywhere because I want to find out when we're going to see you next.
Yeah,
but
I'll stop.
Bye.
See ya. Bye.
Hi. Yeah. So that was that. But yeah, if you do have any questions, then please get in touch. I remember when he spoke about being at that party with Channing Tatum, I'd begged him to take me to that party, but he said no. And he lied when he said the reason that he couldn't take me was because it was a boys' night. And then when he was there, he was messaging me because there was quite a lot of celebrities there. And then he said about someone's wife. And I was like, wait a minute. I didn't think girls were allowed. But yeah, he... I remember getting that message of him saying, oh my God, Channing Tatum's here and I'm going to go and dance with him, but I need to have a drink first. Yeah. I feel like I live my exciting life through him, and he's probably the most unexciting person I know, but he still does quite cool things sometimes. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed that. If you have any topics that you think it would be good for me to discuss, then please get in touch and let me know. Or if you know of anyone or have heard of anyone that you thought it might be good to come on, then please let me know. There is a new episode of the Epic Mum Chat on YouTube. We've had over 500 views of it because it's called Sex, Porn and Bestiality. So from now on, we're going to put the word sex or porn into every one of our titles and see if we have over 500 views. But yeah, it's just a chat about those things. It's a nice chat. It's not graphic, but yeah, we have a laugh, me and Nikki, the Epic Life Coach. So yeah, check that out. Please subscribe to the podcast and the YouTube channel and share. Sharing's caring. If you know of anyone who you think might benefit from listening to me talk about why I don't drink anymore, then please, that's why I did it, because as I said, a lot of people do question me because I think a lot of people do think maybe they shouldn't drink as much, not for any other reason than they can't handle feeling like shit for a week after, or the way that they eat after, or they don't go to the gym because they feel crappy. But I do think that there's almost like you don't feel you can stop because of the social pressures of, oh well, why isn't she drinking tonight? You know, it's like you can't just go to the pub and not drink. Like, I definitely get invited out less because I don't drink, which is fine because I'm a single parent. I can't, for me to get a babysitter, it's a whole other effort. It's not like I can just pop out one night because someone's here with the kids. Like, it's a thing. So more often than not, I would turn down invitations. So it might well be that people just stopped inviting me out because I always said no. But I do think that there is an element of the fact that, well, why would they invite me out because I don't drink? Do you know what I mean? Like, if they're going out to drink, which I completely get. But yeah, it is, it's a funny one, but I can honestly say, hand on heart, it's one of the best decisions I've ever made, because I do just feel so much better. And when you kind of get over that and you understand that you do have a choice, you don't have to get pissed every time you go out and you don't have to feel like shit after, you can go out and have a really nice time, as I do, and not drink. And it just gets to a point where you know that it's not going to get any better, and you've heard the same story 5 times from someone, and everyone, I think everyone kind of gets to that point where they start getting really pissed, and you're like, do you know what, I'm going to go now, and it's fine because I've had a lovely time, I'm going to go home, I'm going to have a good night's sleep, and I'm going to wake up tomorrow, and I've got my whole day to do whatever I want to do. And it's so empowering having that, knowing that you can actually enjoy life without getting battered. As much fun as I had, and I don't regret my life choices, I've had some amazing times, but I also suffered incredibly for them. And yeah, it was the best decision for me. And if you do want to talk to me, I'm more than happy to give you as much advice as I can. I'm obviously not a professional, but yeah, you can do it. If I can do it, anyone can do it, and I promise you that. Anyway, I'll see you next week. Big love. Thank you for helping me get to 100 episodes. Stay safe, stay sane. and I'll see you next week. All right, bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.